Yes, indeed. Yes, I would open every time. Good evening. And welcome to the show. Tonight's episode will be on disparities. So we're going to continue what we discussed last time, and that is disparities. Disparities. And we're also going to take a little deeper dive into something on a collaborative basis, however. So definitely going to appreciate your interaction tonight. Now, disparities, what do we even call them?
Differences, okay. What about those differences? Okay, differences in opportunity, but now what is significant about these differences that have to right now we're speaking in terms of that relates to society. Unfair, unequal. That could be opportunity, but it goes much deeper than that. We differ by gender, we differ by race, ethnicity, we differ by wealth, right? So we differ by income, and those are separate.
Healthcare, education.
We have all these disparities, okay? And one of the things, there's a few things that we kind of concluded about disparities. Some important things. Again, from.
You talking about the two questions about?
No.
No, okay.
About the disparities themselves. What did we conclude last time?
They're naturally occurring in nature.
Right. Naturally occurring.
There's very few, if any, thing in nature that does not have disparities.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I think, when they say, we used to get offended when they say we all look alike. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean,
that's a general.
And we know we don't. But I love watching shows like National Geographic and all of those shows. And I love to see the big cat hunt, you know, the lion, the tiger, and they run down those warthogs and those gazelles and everything. And yet when they're narrating the show and they have a pride of lions and they're following this pride. And they're calling these lions by name. And I'm thinking to myself, how in the heck do they know that one from that one? They all look alike. Right? But do they really? I'm sure that if I was in their environment day in and day out, and certainly they know, right? Let a rival cat come in and try to, circumvent the king of the tribe, the pride. They gonna know real quick, no, you're not one of us, right? So they naturally occur. And not only do they naturally occur, watch this, remember, without and within. Isn't that right? And all the lions, they look alike to us, but we're on the outside looking in. But to them, they know. They can distinguish one from the other really quickly. Okay? And we said last time that was true about us, right? We have all of these disparities. And there was another thing that we said last time is that one of the things we were doing was looking at how society currently happen to view disparities on a regular basis, right? And that is what? What was that phrase? Two words. Hint. Hint.
Race and
base.
Yeah.
Yes. Race-based disparities, right? Race-based. So society wants to tell us that all of these disparities are race-based, right? And they say, how so? Because it's built into the system, right? Systematic racism, right? Okay? And so they're saying opportunities, they differ for everyone, but that's because of race, right? These outcomes differ. Well, that's because of race, right? Well, and these are different now, wealth and income, right? Income is basically, you know, how much you bring in, and wealth is how much of it you keep. Very different things, how much you make versus how much you keep. Okay? And they say, and now what is interesting is, and there are some clear disparities. And remember, we're not trying to advocate for or against, right? We're not trying to justify or argue in one direction or another. We're just trying to understand what disparities are in general, and then what? The whole context of our series here.
What does God? What does God think about it?
How should we view these disparities from a biblical perspective, right? And so a glaring wealth disparity is that currently the average white family has a net worth of about $110,000. Okay, on average. The average black family has a net worth of about $12,000. And it is projected by the year 2050, the average white family is going to have a net worth of about $170,000. And the black family is going to have a net worth of about clear disparity. All right. So nobody's arguing if there are disparities. Okay. But now, what were those two questions?
Why?
Why?
And then what does God say about
that? And what does God say about that, right? So we always want to say.
I know. We said, now, I want to go back to zero. How do you have a net worth of zero?
I mean, I'm
going to start. Well, remember.
You owe more than you.
Absolutely. Remember, this is an average. So some people so broke.
He's so far in debt.
They have more debt than they have exactly. Because that, in fact, that's how you compute net worth, right? Net worth is equal to assets minus liabilities, right? So this is, you know, the cars you own, your furniture, your clothes, your everything you own that has value, your house, right? Minus, you know, your credit card debt, your, you know, school loans, all of that, okay? So that's what they're talking about, net worth. So you're exactly right. In order to get zero, you got to have a balance here. Your liabilities is just as much as your assets. That's zero. And now when you talk about, I don't know if it made up here, because I put initials here, but we've got, you know, there's housing disparities, right? That's another disparity that they say. There's a disparity in housing. Okay. In terms of, you know, not only the percentage of each group that owns homes versus the value of those homes as well. So they got all kinds of disparities that are out there. Okay. And we remember that question is, first one is why. Right. So we're saying be careful about coming here and stating that that is the cause of the disparities. Right? Yes, it is a disparity, and the disparity can be classified possibly by race, but it may not be caused through or as a result of race. In other words, you know, this may not be the case just because the system is set up to make that happen. Always have to ask why. And then in general, how does God view disparities? Now, keep in mind when we talk about that, since we're talking about net worth and housing and wealth and income, God's word, what did it say? The poor will what?
Always be with us.
So should we as Christians be shocked that there are disparities in these areas? No, but if we lose focus of who we serve and what he says, we can be easily brought in to the discussion in a non-effective way. And what do I mean by non-effective? Remember the study on evangelism versus activism, right? See, if we're roped in, we're corralled, and we go on their agenda, then we tend to lose focus of what our real agenda should be, right? Because we're focused, yeah, that's true. We don't have no money, we don't have no houses, we don't have no car, and we got a lot of debt. We gotta do something. And we might have to do something. The question is what? Right? Do we try to change the hearts and minds of people in terms of how they view their lives and the world through the gospel? Or do we go with the agenda of the world and say, yeah, let's burn this place down? As if that's going to help your net worth, burning down the businesses.
Actually, it will probably do the opposite, because if you do it in your own neighborhood and there are Black people who own businesses and they're burned down, then that means the net worth of Black people on average and them owning businesses is going to go down, because many of those places are not insured, possibly. Mm-hmm. Those that are may not want to rebuild in that area. If they decide to go somewhere else, that's possible. I stepped out for a minute. You mentioned Deuteronomy chapter 15. I think it starts around verse 7, talking about the poor. It says, if there is a poor man with you, one of your brothers, in any of your towns in your land, which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart nor close your hand for your poor brother, but you shall freely open your hand to him and shall generously lend him sufficient for his needs in whatever he lacks. Beware that there is no base thought in your heart, saying the seventh year and the year of remission is near, and your eye is hostile toward your poor brother, and you give him nothing, then he may cry to the Lord against you, and it will be a sin to you. You shall generously give to him, and your heart shall not be grieved when you give to him, because for this thing the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all your undertaking. For the poor will never cease to be in the land. Therefore, I command you, saying, you shall freely open your hand to your brother, to your needy and poor in your land. So without disparities in terms of income, we wouldn't know nothing about benevolence, generosity, compassion, right? Mercy, right? Grace, these kinds of things. If we didn't see someone who had less than us, then those characteristics that are God's characteristics as well, which he has communicated to us, or are communicable, those communicable attributes, we would not be able to display those to our fellow man. And I think that that is part of the wisdom of God, so that we can be the instrument of God in the hands of God, being used to take care of those needs, rather than God just saying, everybody's going to get the same thing, so that there are no disparities whatsoever. Everybody has everything that they need, and therefore people won't have to use their resources to give to someone else that they see in need. So there would not be anything such as benevolence, right? And that's something that we have in the church even, is a benevolent fund, and it's for that reason, because there will always be poor in the land, and we are supposed to be stewards of that which God has given us and give it to those people freely, as it says here, and not withhold from them. In this day, it was because of the year of Jubilee, when all debts were going to be freed anyway. Don't say, well, I'm not going to give to them because they get money from the government, or I'm not going to give to them because, you know, of this reason or that reason, because you're begrudging them of something that you could help them with, but you're saying, I'm going to let somebody else do that.
You know, along those same lines, I was thinking, you know, when you recap in terms of disparity, as, you know, in that definition, the word unfair, what stands out is unfair from whose perspective, right? So in our natural eye, we may look at how people have quote unquote things that we don't, and therefore it's unfair that we don't have what they have. Or people look in our situation, they feel it's not fair that they don't have what we have. You know, given that, I was thinking about even spiritual gifts, right? That God gives.
Why don't you just teach the Bible stuff?
No,
I'm everywhere I'm going.
I'll wait. I'll yield my time. Hey.
So where's my gavel?
Time.
Yeah, that's good. That's good, because those are questions we're all going to address tonight. Unfair to whom? And then we're going to also talk about those spiritual gifts. Yes, sir.
Could you write down one other question on there that I'd like to have addressed?
Oh,
yes. And because I have to speak for her, but she can't speak. She used to do all the speaking back in the day, but now she's not able to do so. I have to do it for her. This is a question that she would probably ask.
Yeah, putting that on her.
Right. Yeah.
I want to see if you all had talked about the difference, because you were talking about causation. Mm-hmm. Have we talked about the difference between causation or causality and correlation?
No, we haven't.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, so, and that can be confused at times, because there are things that correlate but are not necessarily a cause.
Isn't that the point?
Huh?
Isn't that the point, though?
What's the point?
To confuse.
Well, it's not semantics, right?
Yeah.
But we want to make sure that we understand the difference between the words.
Yeah, you take me back to statistics now. I have to break that bill.
Yes, I like that.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get to that
one.
All right. And I might sprinkle that in there throughout. So we'll see. Now, when we talk about, remember I said there are disparities within and without, right? And oftentimes we focus on those that are without, right? There are differences in wealth and disparities in housing and disparities in medical care and health disparities, et cetera. And it's often, but they compare it with race, okay? But there's also disparities within. Y'all remember that from last time? We talked about the incomes for African Americans versus those from the West Indies, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there were disparities. I mean, it was huge, right?
You talked specifically about the second generation people.
Not the first generation. But that made it even more interesting because by that second generation, they had pretty much, what's the word for it?
Conflate, bring it up, unite, integrate.
Between my understanding of the word and yours. Yes, but what they have congealed, if you will, to a point to where people can't determine necessarily whether they're African American or West Indies, the second generation.
Assimilated.
Yes, that's the word I'm going to put right there. Assimilated. So they've assimilated because they've grown up, they've gone to school with one another, so their speech is a little less distinguished one from the other. When the police pulls them over, they tend not to know, you know, whether you're from the West Indies or whether you're from Brooklyn. I mean, it's like, who knows, right? Okay, and so remember that their average income was $58,000 more than African Americans. Their average income, $58,000 more than American-born blacks, and $15,000 more than the national average. Right? That's all within the same race. If you're putting all of us as black, right? Now, so what is the constant here? The constant would be what? If it's true, right? Because if racism was as prevalent as we think it is, then it would not distinguish between this black person and that black person. You see what I'm saying? Again, I'm not advocating one or another, and nobody's here to definitely advocate and say there's no racism. We know there's racism because there is.
There's sin in the world.
Yeah, and because there's sin, there's going to be racism. Absolutely, yes. So nobody's arguing that, just like nobody's arguing other disparities. Nobody's arguing if there's racism. Nobody's arguing. So yes, there are all of these things, but remember the question is, why? So we can ask that question here. Why is there racism? Because there's sin, right? And the beautiful thing, and I might be jumping ahead a bit here, but since I'm here, the beautiful thing about this is, you know, God is a God that doesn't hide anything. I mean, that's the thing you can appreciate about God. He's going to take the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? So when people say, how can you serve a God that killed all of the Canaanites? They're killing the men, women, and children. And listen, how can he allow this to happen? How can he allow that to happen? Well, because there's sin, right? And yes, David, how could you, if David was an adulterer, and he was the, right? God ain't got nothing to hide. He wants to display our need for him, right? He's got nothing to hide. So we know that even that character in the New Testament, Peter, right? I mean, you know, if you want to, we can talk about that if that was the topic, right? They got all kinds of passages about racism, right? Amongst the disciples, let alone Christians, right? So nobody's arguing if it exists. We want to know why and how does God address it? How does he think about it? Mm-hmm. And therefore, we should think the way God thinks. Mm-hmm. Okay? So we know that racism is there. Why? Because there's sin in the world. That's our biblical worldview. We can go down the list, A, B, C, D. Well, it's because of this. It's because of slavery. It's because of oppression. It's because of Jim Crow. It's because of, da-da-da-da-da. Okay, well, those are really just symptoms of the real cause, right? Why was there slavery? Why was there Jim Crow?
Manifestations,
right? And absolutely, yes.
One thing also, see, racism is what birthed the idea of race in the first place, because we wouldn't even see things to the way through the lens of race if there was no racism.
Y'all getting me excited. and Darren, y'all are just tag teaming on me.
Don't forget Andy.
All right. Okay. Now let's dig a little, just a tad bit deeper into disparities, and then we're going to go on into the scriptures. When you think about disparities, and remember, we're talking about how does God view? Because remember, that's our goal, so that we can say, so that we can be at an obvious difference to the world, right? When we approach these conversations, when we approach life issues, when we are faced with some things, we are challenged by God to have his view on the matter. We are his ambassadors, right? We are the ones commissioned to carry his gospel to a dying world. So we are speaking on his behalf. So we got to view things from his perspective. You know, I think about the press secretary, right? They're out there, and she's, the last, and I say she because the last two press secretaries were women, and they're out there, what? Representing the president. And they're asking questions. How come President so-and-so did this? How come President so-and-so did that? Well, why didn't President so-and-so do this? And what was the thought behind this particular policy? And right? And they got an answer on behalf of the president, mm-hmm. right? They can say, well, I think he may have thought, and well, if you look at what happened over here, no, they said, well, President so-and-so believes, mm-hmm. President so-and-so thinks that, mm-hmm. President so-and-so, right? Mm-hmm. That's their job, isn't that right? Mm-hmm. How much more is it our job to say, well, okay, but this is how God feels about this. Mm-hmm.
We don't.
Yeah. This is what God says. Yes. God's word says.
Yes.
God's, you see? Because we're his representative. So when we look at disparities, think about when we talk about the why disparities anyway? Watch this. When there are disparities, that means that there is what we think, right? Remember, unfair to whom? What we think is the ideal, right? And then there is where we are, right? Remember, you are here. Right? And then that creates a what? A disparity. Right? There's a disparity. And then what? In this disparity is a chasm. And we're trying to figure out, remember, we should ask why. But as we think about, how does God deal with this disparity? Well, think about it. When there is an ideal, and my word is going to be strategic, and we are falling short. Right?
Yes, sir.
It creates a
makes meaning. If we have no needs, God. What reason? You see, disparities, if we see this from God's perspective, right? If everything was even keel, everybody had the same size house, everybody had the same income, everybody had the same degree, everybody had the same this, that, and the other, right? Then we wouldn't have Deuteronomy 15, right? Where we would... And how we meet this need, right? That's where God invokes you and me, right? Right? Is to help bridge this gap. Right? He invites us as his representative to be a part of helping to fill this gap. But what are we as Christians, when we lose sight of God and his purpose, then we are going to be roped in to what the world said, yeah, let's march, right? We get active, right? And we go over to activism. And it was stated that it's not that activism is wrong, right? Yeah. Solomon tells us a time and place for everything under the sun, right? Okay. But let's not lose sight of how God is viewing these disparities, our role in meeting these disparities from a biblical perspective. Okay. And you can be active, but if you be sure to do so with the mindset of, yes, I'm active, but the gospel is my mission. The gospel is my mission. It's not even really the disparity necessary, the ultimate goal, right? It's the gospel, okay? All right, so now, one of the things, I went back and forth on how I was going to approach tonight, and I kept going back to Junie in our discussion last week. Brother was passionate, you know.
Yes, he was.
And you know what? I read that over and over and over again. That I just kept going back to that passage, and I said, you know what? The Lord just told me, you know, we need to validate that brother's feelings, you know, because he had a point, right? He had a point. So that's one we're gonna let's go there, go back there, and that's where we're gonna start our. Throwing out some things. Boy, how time flies. You're having fun. That's Matthew 20. And the labor is in the vineyard. And let's, we're going to put you on the timer. I need to get a timer. Right? Because I want to go through this. And just to remind you all, y'all know the... there was a man who owned the field. He wanted some laborers to work in his vineyard.
Yes.
He went out in the morning,
yeah.
Grabbed some laborers. Yeah. They agreed on a price. They said, cool, let's go. They went to the field, started working. He went back out at 9:12, 3, and again at 5, right? They say the 11th.
The 11th.
Right, but it was really 5 p.m. because they didn't work, you know, at 6 p.m., right? And so they brought all of them in, and then when it was time to pay them, he told the foreman, bring everybody in, and let's pay them. And starting with the last from the first, okay? And we said that, you know what? People had what? Unequal effort, but equal outcome, because they all got paid the same. They didn't all put in the same effort, right? Mm-hmm. And someone, I think it was Sister Brenda, that said, you know, they had unequal opportunity too, because the other ones, you know, they didn't have opportunity to start in the morning
with everyone else because they started later. And so they didn't have the opportunity. In fact, remember the ones that when he went to the people at the 11th hour, he said, well, what y'all standing around for?
Nobody hired us.
Right? I mean, I read that statement and thought, you know, they could have been looking for work. Right? The others, they said they were standing around idle, right? And they had no other description. But with the last one, they said, nobody hired us. Mm-hmm. They could have been looking for work. Mm-hmm. They could have said, you know, man, keep me down. I'm looking for work. We can't find a job.
Right? Wow. They're persistent.
Yes. And so they took the offer, went to work, and came and got paid.
Right.
And if you look at it, the people that were there early, they felt like Judy. What the? That's one of the ugliest guys I didn't want to record.
Junie didn't say that, did he?
Yeah. So and so we thought about, you know, that's where we get to what? Unfair to whom? Right? Because when you think about it, remember, we talked about sometimes they want equal outcomes. You know, that's what our society is looking for, equal outcomes, right? And when you get equal outcomes, it doesn't mean everybody's happy.
Right.
Right. See, that was the question, right? Unfair to whom? Because they thought, I would work all day. That's 12 hours. Right? 6 to 6. And then this person works 1 hour and gets the same pay. So what do you think about that? Now, from the scripture, yes.
I wish I would have been here last week to hear again. That you thought this was unfair, right? Could you just recap?
It's unfair to my aching body. I'm slaving away. It ain't doing as much as me. And it ain't making as much money as I do. Feels like my effort would be wasted.
So the way I look at it is like we read this prayer in the past, you went through this. It's such a, if you look at it, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. To me, this is like the world and its system, the horizontal versus, you know, the vertical dimension of business school. Like a different type of ethic, a different type of business school is being taught here. And what comes out of this is that he didn't break some sort of contract. You know, you agreed to that rage, and the other guy, he was just being particularly, or the other guy's generous. And this generosity is something you never seem to see. Just this isn't a perfect example, but imagine if you wanted to, you know, get a new, we got this rain coming down, and we wanted to get a new roof coming down, and you went out and you got 3 bids. And the first bid was for like, you know, $20,000, and then the second bid was for like $10,000. And then someone comes and says, I'll do it for $5,000. And you say, you know what? I'm going to give you $20,000 for it, you know, because the other guys, or maybe $10,000, you know, I'm going to give you double what you asked because other guys are bidding up $10,000, $20,000. You come at $5,000 and the world, what's the world going to do? They're going to pocket the difference. So you say, oh, you know, I could have paid $20,000. I get it for $5,000. I'm going to pocket that $15,000. That's the way you just drive it down as low as you can get. But why? You know, let's say you got 10 bids and this guy comes in at 5,000, all the other bids are 10,000, 15,000. Not a perfect example. Why are you shorting the guy? You know, he's, you know, give him what he's worth kind of thing. Be more generous. Again, this is another more contemporary example, but how many people would do that? You know,
right.
So again, God's way of dealing and doing business, uh-huh. You know, we need a name for that business, so I'm not sure. What
My question would be, where does the perception of unfairness come from? What caused that?
It's
like tech. You know, I'm in the bureau. I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. But as far as why did those laborers who had been out there for 12 hours think that it was unfair? What gave them that perception that it was unfair?
if they didn't know what everybody else was making, It's like,
and it's the same way with wages today. If you're doing the same job that somebody else in your department is doing, and you find out how much they're making compared to how much you're, that's going to impact your thinking about your job and your own personal worth.
Yeah, and looking at also.
But before that day, you were totally content to work every single day, show up on time, do extra until you find out how much she's making or how much he's making doing the same job.
And that's why PNC will fire you if you disclose your income to others.
Yes.
That's why.
Yes.
Aiden?
You think about it this way. Of course, yes, you got the amount that you agreed upon, right? The money that they got is not, it's not like it's a split of the money you got, it's their money, it's not yours. So you shouldn't really worry about that. Like, it's not your money. It's not like they're taking money out of your paycheck to split it with somebody that didn't do as much work. You got the money that you wanted, that you agreed upon. So there should be no problem.
So who did the money come from?
The money didn't come from me.
It's where did it come from?
It came from the person that owns the venue.
Is it their right to do with what they have?
Yes.
So that's an interesting question, because earlier in terms of fairness, unfairness, one of the things I mentioned was, we tend to look at what people have that we don't have, or other people look at what we have that they don't have. In this particular parable, the unfairness is not based upon the amount given as much as it is the belief that one group or individuals did more to earn that same amount than the other. So now it's not just a fairness from a, he got something I didn't get, we got the same thing. It's now drilled down to that sin nature, really, to look at, well, why did they get the same amount I did? I deserve what I deserve, but they don't deserve what I deserve because I don't think they deserve what I deserve. You understand what I'm saying? So it's not an earning thing. Now we're looking into the owners, we're trying to turn the parable. Yes. The people looking at the owner's intent and purpose and rationale for that.
Do you not see it as being generous? Can you see through that prism?
It's like,
you see it that way.
I feel like I just got shortchanged. Like, you built up some evil.
But look at it from the other person's perspective. Don't you see? And look at what
see. It's like, I don't care if you get 12, but you're gonna give me more than 12 because I get more than he did.
I appreciate it. Now you're not him, and now you're the other person.
So I think we got one back here.
Yes.
It's like, if I was babysitting her and my other sister was babysitting her, we both watching one shots, but she was there, she was upstairs on the phone all the time. I was actually watching her, but we both got the same job because every week, yes, we were there, but she didn't even have too much work as I did, but we still got the same amount of money.
That's that Mary Martha symptom.
I don't think Judy's point is wrong if he's looking at the right system. The system that he's looking at is a system that's based on merit. Mm,
that's good.
Which isn't wrong either, right?
It's not wrong if you're looking at it from that system, right. A system of merit.
Meritocracy, something like that. Yeah.
This is not a system of merit.
All right.
So God's system is not a system of merit.
And that is the thing, right there. Mm. So if we focus on our sense of fairness, right, then when we ask why, and then it's not going to be based on God's sense of fairness and equity and justice, right? We look outside of God for those answers. And that's why we still, it's got to be race. It's got to be, because every time I look at these disparities, you know, race is there, right? But remember, we saw a disparity within race, right? So we can't really see, you know, what's the
Sister Shapri typed in the chat, comparison is the thief of joy.
Yes.
I like that.
Sister Mark.
I don't know if I was talking to you or if it was something I was listening to, but the point was made that our viewpoint of fairness or some people's viewpoint of fairness is skewed because, like, if there was a, let's just say an example of a Black person in a job and a white person in a job, if the Black person is the one that's making more, we're like, oh, okay, well, that's great, that's fine. But if the white person is the one that's making more, oh, no. It's not right. You know, this is racist. Mm-hmm. So I think that sometimes it's like we think about it as we're the, I don't want to say underdog, but the oppressed. And if those who are within the oppressed race or whatever the category you want to put it in, if they are excelling and exceeding, it's fine, according to some. But if then when they're not, that's when there's racism.
Mm-hmm. Brother Martin, you have... Maybe they needed a union system back then. it's just a work. It's today. It's the same thing. I mean, Junie Wright, you know, and when you see that, I would have a problem with that as well. But knowing that you'll be looking at it in a worldly view, versus the spiritual view that this is bringing out. But I would definitely feel I don't know whether to say racial or not, because it can happen to anybody. But I would feel bad if somebody came in and like that at the last moment and or whatever, you know, and got, if it was wrong. Then somebody said, why are you complaining? It won't get you anywhere. But always say, if you see something wrong and you know it's wrong, a closed mouth won't get fed. So if you can be right and saying complaining about it. Somebody, I won't complain. Oh, well, it all depends. If you won't complain about somebody doing you wrong, that's you. But a lot of us, you know, being in down here on this earth in the workforce, these things is definitely going to come out, you know. But I see where you're going with this, but I really do. Yeah.
And that's why I wanted to come back to it, because I didn't want to validate that feeling that he had, but I also wanted to accentuate why the feeling was there and to be careful, because as you stated, Elder Matt, if we look at it from our human standpoint, our definition and understanding of fairness, our definition of the ideal, right? Then yes, there was that disparity there. And then I hate that I erased it, but remember that means there was a need, right? And there was a valid need there, right? A concern. The question is, how do we bridge that gap? Do we bridge it in our own efforts, or do we seek God's advice on how to seek to bridge that gap? And now let's take a little closer look at the passage. Most of you brought out a lot of these things. First of all, it says, and when they received it, they grumbled at the landowner, saying, these last men have worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us. Mm-hmm. Equal outcomes. Who have borne the burden and the scorching heat of the day. Toil all day long. That's not fair. They had their sense of fairness, right? Okay. But he, the landowner, answered and said to one of them, so that means it was more than one of them, right? They came, right? All those laborers, like, yeah.
That's cool, Mr. Rico. You speak.
He answered and said to one of them, friend, I am doing you no wrong. And see, there's a clash of ideology right there. Yeah. Right? They came and said, this is unfair. You are unfair. I have been treated unfair. You have created this disparity, right? Disparity in effort, right? Equal outcome, unequal effort, right? You've created this disparity unfairly. And he says, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Well, yeah, yeah. Then take what is yours and go away. Wow. In other words, I kept my word. Mm.
Yeah.
I was righteous and I'm just. Yes.
So in other words, okay. That is not an injustice, but a non-justice.
What does the rest of the passage say?
But I wish to give to this last man the same as you. But I wish. Is it not lawful for me to do what I wish with what is my own? Mm-hmm. Or is it your, somebody said it, envy, right? Or is your eye envious because I am generous? Remember Deuteronomy 15, right? You know, these are people that had a need. We don't know what the landowner saw when he found them on the block, right? Remember, he said, I don't have a job. Nobody hired me. We don't have all the information, right? Now, keep in mind, in terms of his fairness, watch this, remember, and when, this is at the beginning, when he saw the first laborers, and when he had agreed with the laborers for a denarius for the day, he sent them into the field. Then he went out and got others, but watch this, and he said to those, you go into the vineyard, and whatever is right, I will give you. They didn't even negotiate a salary. They were just happy to have a job.
Right.
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
They didn't even know what they were going to get paid. So guess what they did? They put their trust in the land. They trusted the landowner was going to do what was right.
Mm.
And they know what they were going to get paid. They just went to work.
What did he say? What did he say? I want to hear what he said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mic that.
He said what?
He said, you missed it.
You know,
so I think Elder Watts got a counsel on that.
Not only based on what you read, not only did the landowner give what it was just, he kept his word.
Yes.
See, I think it would be different if the landowner said, promise a certain fee, and then reneged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I promise you 50 denarii, but at the end of the day, I changed my mind and you're getting 10. But he was consistent, especially when you look at the spiritual implications of this. God keeps his word because he is just. If he were an unjust God, he wouldn't and couldn't keep his word. So if you're looking for justice and consistency, we have it in God. He, you know, El Maxine saw God is able to do what he says he would do.
Maybe this might make a little more sense to Jules. I'm not sure. But say, for instance, in our school, there are four secretaries. All of us really get paid the same thing. All of us get paid the same thing, but we do not do an equal amount of work. Mm-hmm. And on any job, there might be four people doing the same job, mm-hmm. or same title, let's put it that way, the same title. You're all laborers. You've all been, it's all been decided that you're all gonna get whatever it is, $15 an hour, okay? But at the end of the day, if you really look at it, you're not doing equal work. Because somebody invariably is not going to do their share of the work. And that's kind of the way you need to look at this, is that you're all, there's gonna be a job that all of you are supposed to be doing the same thing, but you're gonna always find somebody that's a slacker. Mm-hmm. You're gonna find somebody else that's gonna do just enough
to get that. Mm-hmm.
And then you're gonna find someone that does everything, does all the work. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at it maybe in that perspective, that it doesn't matter what time they got there, because some of us can get there at 6 o'clock in the morning, but we don't start working until an hour before it's time to leave. So,
or when it's around.
So that's a more practical way of looking at it, that you all have the same job to do, but not everyone does the same amount of work.
Like, when you think about a job, though, a lot of people, they, like, take their worth in relation to the job as the paycheck. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So when our worth is essentially the exact same, when you're saying that let's say that 1 hour versus my 12 hour, when you're saying that 1 hour and he's still worth 12 and I'm worth 12, it's 12 with 12 hours of work.
Yeah.
Are you saying he's worth more than I am?
No, it's not saying that he's worth more. It's just saying who did the same amount of work. You got the same job. All of them had the same job. Mm-hmm. All of them had the same job. They just didn't do the same amount of work.
I see what he's saying, but I
understand what he's saying.
I would answer in this regard. All these examples you're presenting are valid, but from whose perspective? Yours or God's? In other words, if you say you're trying to tell me that they all work the same, well, no. What I'm saying is, from God's perspective, you have a misplaced value on your worth. In other words, your worth isn't in how much you make. Your worth is in what God attributes your worth to. So again, you're still dealing on this linear pattern as opposed to this vertical. And so if I'm worked up because this is showing that they're worth just as much as me, that their work is just as valuable as mine. But we don't answer this way. Remember, we want to have a biblical worldview. So we need to say, you know what? My worth is mutually exclusive of my income, right? So technically, you can pay me what you want.
Yes.
It doesn't affect my worth.
Amen.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's why it's interesting in a lot of folks that I've been reading. The challenge is, and I put it in my own words, it's hard to keep grace amazing.
Yes.
Because people always want to earn. And if you get into this earning thing, then it's no longer grace.
Yes.
It's no longer grace. Then you start getting into justice. And we don't want justice when it comes to justice. We don't want justice. We just don't. If we get justice, nobody on that corner would have gotten a job,
right?
Yeah. It didn't say he didn't have workers already.
Also, and Atlanta was the first group, was the only one that actually agreed to a certain amount. Mm-hmm. The other, they said,
right.
I will give
you
what you want,
what is right. Yes, he did.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's put this all in more of God's perspective.
you do want to keep in mind that this parable was illustrating a concept or answering a question that Peter had asked in the previous chapter. Peter said, then Peter answered, it starts at verse 27 of chapter 19. Then Peter answered and said to him, Jesus, behold, we have left everything and followed you. What then, where will there be for us? So he too was saying, look, I'm done with nobody else is done. You're sending for me. Right? And Jesus said to him, truly, I say to you, that you who have followed me in the regeneration, when the Son of Man will be on his glorious throne, you shall also sit upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes. And then he goes on, but many of you, and this is how 19 ends, but many who are first will be last, and the last first. Then he goes into this parable. So the parable was all to set up what he's saying from the standpoint of those people who enter the kingdom last will be, they're going to be on equal standing, equal outcome, right? You come into the kingdom, right? Equal in terms of salvation. Now, you know, rewards, that's another issue. Right? Right, even there are going to be disparities.
Right,
so God isn't anti-disparity. Right? Just like anything, he created this thing and he's saying, look, that's all right. Okay. But that's what the parable is illustrating. So he's trying to say, listen, I know Peter that you follow me. You've left everything. But you're really not gonna get much more than anybody else. You know, because you're after your own thing right now. Okay.
Yes. Well, something you brought out last week, too, in reference to the thief on the cross, you can look at Peter and say, wait a minute, I've been with you for 3 years, Jesus, and you're going to give this thief on the cross, who's been here for 3 hours, the same thing that I'm going to get, which is eternal life, right? So we have a 3-hour Christian and a 3-year Christian, both getting the same thing, and he's about to die in this day, be with Jesus in paradise. But now I got to live the rest of my life being persecuted and get hung upside down on the cross and go through all this pain and suffering. But the end result is going to be what? Heaven, the same thing. Mm-hmm. So there's a disparity there as well. But in terms of reward, Peter is going to receive more rewards than the thieves on the cross.
So
One thing else I think he's getting at that is, I mean, we're looking at these individual levels, yeah, me versus you, you versus me, and we're so individually focused, which is kind of not really the way that you should kind of analyze and understand the world that we live in, and certainly I think that's also a limitation. I think God doesn't see people just as individuals against other people. He sees the whole world, and then he sees what we see here is we've got through Jesus, him, you know, the prophet, you know, the Son of God speaking, you know, God incarnate speaking to his people. Mm-hmm. But yet here we have these other workers that come late. So I think in this, he's implying, I mean, I haven't done any commentaries on it, but he's breaking open the kingdom to the Johnny come lately Gentiles, right? Mm-hmm. Who have not been there. They haven't been through all that with Moses and all the, you know, the pruning and all that stuff. They're just showing up late for the party and getting in. So, you know, I see that also in this parable too, right? And then there's the Greek door too, you know, we're all paid the same wage. So,
oh my goodness, yeah. Great segue. Galatians 3. 28. All right, now remember, in Galatians 3, just real quick here, this is right as Paul had called Peter out for his hypocrisy, his racist actions, right? When Cephas came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face,
yes, sir,
because he stood condemned.
Yeah.
For prior to coming to certain men from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles, but when they came, he began to withdraw and hold himself aloof, fearing the party of the circumcision. Mm. And when the rest of the Jews joined him in hypocrisy, with the result that even Barnabas was carried away by the hypocrisy. But when I saw that they were not straightforward about the truth of the gospel, I said to Cephas in the presence of all, if you, being a Jew, live like the Gentiles and not like the Jews, how is it that you compel the Gentiles to live like the Jews? So he's saying, look, number one, there's a time to be active. See, Paul said, no, it's time to call you out, right? But what was Paul's focus? He said, you are not being true about the, did y'all hear that? It says, I saw that you were not straightforward about the truth of the gospel. You see? Even in his activism, he was focused on the gospel. It was about the gospel. It wasn't about the racism. It wasn't about the people from a standpoint of Jew versus Greek, right? He says, look, you jacking up the gospel, man. You got to get yourself together. Right? See, that's God's perspective, right? Evangelism versus activism. Having a mindset of evangelism. Even if you're going to be an activist, evangelism is your goal. That's your focus. Now, he goes on, talks about the law, and then he gets down here and he's kind of tying this up. In verse 28, he says, there is neither Jew nor Greek. There is neither slave nor free. There is neither male nor female. For you are all one in Christ Jesus. And if you belong to Christ, then you are Abraham's offspring, heirs according to the promise. Mm-hmm. See, this is the point. We got to avoid, as Christians, groupthink. And that's what, whenever we put the descriptor race-based disparities, you see, we're in groupthink, right? And God says, look, you know, we got to avoid that because there's neither Jew nor Greek, right? So don't, racism shouldn't be an issue. There's neither male nor female, you see, because in our economy, it's not gender either, right? Now, that's not saying we should all be gender neutral, right? That's not what he's saying, right? Because he also created biology, and that's fairly clear. But what he's saying is, you know, for example, feminism, right? That's groupthink, right? That's groupthink. Now they probably have some valid issues. Again, I'm not here to argue for or against, but it's groupthink. Because now I'm putting my group above my Christianity. When I feel like I have been wronged, whether in employment, whether it's, you know, for gender reasons, for race reasons, for, you know, You got to be careful of groupthink, because God says, nope, you know, we got a couple things. We've got this here, and I'm going to end with this. Boy, I might have to have a third week.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, I got one week off.
See you right next time.
Oh, that's why he's like, yeah. So, look, here's the deal. I'm going to live with this. When this is what happens, you see, me. When we start thinking about disparities, particularly based on race or even gender, right, for example, what does that do? See, it focuses on me. See, disparities.
I didn't make the same amount of money. I didn't get the same job. I didn't get to go to the same school. I didn't get to buy the same house. I know where I got this one individual, right? Right? So what is it that we should do? There's really what? Have, by the way, this is what we refer to as a Venn diagram. Right? See, we got this here. See, it keeps us from focusing on what? You got others, i.e. non-believers, and then you got others that are believers. Okay? I mean, there's two people, because what does God call us to do? Be generous, right? We're to edify one another, but uplift one another, etc. And then what happens? Hopefully, these believers will reciprocate, right? But then keep in mind, it's all because of what? God. As God empowers us, right? He's also working in believers, right? And he's also working here too, right? Because no one comes to the Father unless he is drawn, right? But if we're focused, if we lose our concept of evangelism and the gospel, and we're focused on disparities and what we think is the cause, then guess what? We're right here. And that's why, you know, folk are leaving the faith. Churches aren't growing because people aren't coming to the faith. Right? Because we focused on what they tell us to focus on, not what God tells us to focus on. Okay?
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen.